Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. This is Maja Daou here hosting today. Eric Davis won't be on. We will miss him dearly. But he'll be on next week, so don't worry. Today, we're going to be talking about gardening and plants. And on the show, a lot we talk about plants an awful lot. A lot of them are the mind-altering nature, and how human beings kind of interact with a lot of the chemicals that are in plants. But today, we're going to be speaking with an author who wrote a book called Shamanic Gardening, Timeless Techniques for the Modern Sustainable Garden. We're very lucky to be speaking with Melinda Joy Miller today. And I personally was very lucky. I had two amazing gardeners in my family. My grandfather, after he retired, put all of his effort into producing his garden, which was completely remarkable. He had the most famous roses for like a 10-mile radius where we lived because he was just so amazing at it. And then my mother followed suit and always had a tremendous garden with flowers and plants. Some of them were poisonous. Some of them were food. She would grow us all kinds of food. So I, as a kid, I spent a lot of time in the kind of secret garden mode. So I've spent a good deal of time thinking about plants and how they affect us and gardening and people's ability to interact with plants and how we can manipulate them or have relationships with them and how they affect our mood just by looking at them. I know if some of you guys, there's been a lot of brouhaha in the last little bit about agriculture. There was, of course, the book Guns, Germs, and Steel that came out that really hypothesized that the human species was able to progress technologically on account of agriculture and planting things on purpose. And, you know, likewise, there was the, I don't know if how many folks saw it, but there was the Ted Kaczynski book. Of course, the Unabomber put out his book while he was in prison where he pretty much said the same thing, that it was agriculture that was responsible. So we have quite a tight relationship with plants. So we're going to talk a little bit today about ancient practices and kind of more spiritual ways that we can have a relationship with plants and our gardens. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on Melinda. Melinda, how are you doing?
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me to be on your show. I'm just so honored, and I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's our pleasure to have you on. So your book really kind of brings up some of these old practices that people would have taking care of plants. Can you tell folks a little bit about, like, what you kind of say that shamanic gardening is?
Well, shamanic gardening, I think that the shaman is a person who really spends his whole life really working on developing his sensory systems. And so in that view, in the shamanic gardening, the part aspect is awakening your shaman inside, the within. Mm-hmm. And really, so the system, though, of shamanic gardening is something that I put together after 30 years of gardening and studying permaculture, studying with native people. And so it really is a blend of sustainable ways of working in the garden with ancient teachings from all different indigenous cultures, certainly Native American and Chinese and Japan, and companion planting, and just some Chinese and Japanese design concepts in respect of how the ancient Chinese and how the ancient Japanese, the designers, how did they go about designing their gardens, and how did they, what did they look at? How did they observe nature? And certainly, above all that, is the feng shui systems, which work with elements. And a lot of the qi, the energy of the earth and the energy of each plant has something to give. It's a gift, really, certainly to the person who's working in the garden. But it just puts it right into the air. It radiates into the air as an energy, and all energy has an effect on people. Different energies all have different effects on different people. And
right.
So we also have and bring in the more modern psychological and environmental psychological ways and methods of and studies of how people are really affected and impacted by the environment. And so today we're going to talk about the environment of your garden and how that can impact your life and impact your health.
It's really, it's so true, and I'm so glad that you talked about the energy of plants. And for a lot of folks, that might sound a little abstract, like that plants can have a certain energy. But like, I studied Chinese medicine, and the premise of it is that all of the plants have their own type of energetic signature, which affects human beings, and specifically they can, you know, affect an organ system, or like they'll have one plant will have a certain kind of energy that affects our heart, or another one that affects our large intestine, or another. So it can get really specific with the kinds of energy, like you're saying, they have an energetic effect, and it can be so specific and so kind of laser beamed and articulate that it's really important for people to understand that older civilizations could recognize those kind of energies. Could you maybe give an example of like a personal energy relationship you've had with a plant?
Oh, I would love to. I've had so many. One way to really understand more clearly what we're talking about is energy is really just aromatherapy. We have scented candles and vanilla, which is one of the most popular, of course. That has an effect on the environment. Now, what we study in studying of box flower remedies or flower essences, my studies were very, very deep into flower essences because that it's a way, really, of getting the signature of the flower, the essence, the life essence of that flower. And so when we talk about the energy and how it affects a person or how it affects the environment, a lot of these, in the beginning, we had, it wasn't so scientific. It was more word of mouth. It was oral. You know, thousands and thousands, millions of years ago, when women were, you know, creating their catalogs in their mind of the herbs that they had, that they encountered. This herb has an effect on the body in such a way. This herb has an effect on a wound, perhaps, that, you know, somebody hurt themselves, and then you can clean it with this herb. And so that was one way. And then, like the rose, let's take the rose for today, because there isn't a flower more used today for its energy and for its beauty and for its elegance than the rose. I mean, the rose is so ancient. It's been woven into food customs, into celebrations, into mystical and shamanic ritual, ancient tales and stories of romance, and even into the religions of the world. I mean, we look at the white rose for Mary. We look at the pink rose for love. And now if we have the energy...
There's the rose, the Rosicrucians, too, as well. The rose is the main symbol for the Rosicrucian Society.
Absolutely. So the rose is ancient. It's one of the very first flowers, perhaps, that grew on the earth. They found one. I don't have that right in front of me, the exact time, but a million years ago, they found one, actually an old antique rose in America. And so it has just completely, and today, how many people are giving roses today?
Exactly.
And that's the other part of energies, and because it's like, really, we know it because culturally, people know it because we've been taught it. And so we believe that the rose has to do with love. And that's why it's part of religion, that all religions have to do with some form of love, the love, the force of love. And so we can have a picture of a rose, and it conjures up all those feelings and emotions and mental beliefs about the rose.
It's really very powerful. That's such a great example. I mean, and one that is so, like, global, you know? I mean, you talk about these kind of things, and it is cultural, but it extends to so many different cultures. And like you said, all you have to do is even say the word rose, and then in your mind, all of this stuff just kind of blossoms, you know?
It does. In the book, I have lots of tips. I have a whole chapter on romance, because romance is all about love. And love is the most important quality or energy and force of the earth, of human beings. And so I have this whole chapter, and I tell people, I go into a little bit of detail how to create a romantic garden. And I have the rose arbor, which is such a common... In America, it's almost an icon, isn't it? The arbor with roses on it. And the other part of that is that the shamanic part of that is that when you look at a rose arbor, you always look up. And when you look up, that's uplifting.
Well, and that's like the energy of flowers in general has that rising, lifting capacity. You know, like I mentioned in Chinese medicine, the flower, you take it and it causes all the qi to rise up. And I feel like even when you smell, the aroma goes into your head, and it has a lifting. All the flowers, I feel like, have that kind of lifting quality.
Yes, they absolutely do. They absolutely do. I feel that, you know, we need to really eat more flowers, don't we? And that's what it's all about. I mean, really edible flowers. Not all flowers are edible. But we need to really be more aware of what flowers are edible and how they can affect us.
As a little kid growing up, my mom would always give us nasturtiums to eat.
And do you still like it today?
I do. They're so good in salad. You know, they're really peppery and nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they are. They're so beautiful. And, you know, I love the gift they have, of course, is the taste and the smell and the look of that, those, you know, just hot colors. But the other thing is they kind of surrender themselves to the bugs, because in the garden, they help bring all the bugs to itself, the nasturtium, and the other plants don't get bugs. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, they act as a sort of bug guardian for the rest of the garden.
A great way to say it, a bug guardian. Absolutely. And the one thing with a nasturtium, which they are such a favorite of everyone. They, in the cultural and the folklore of nasturtium, it opens feelings through all of the senses. So we should have them growing everywhere.
Yeah, and I like how you were talking about with the shaman thing, with the shamanic garden. It is very true. Throughout many of the scholarly research on shamanism, one of the ways that they continually will define what a shaman is someone who has a heightened perception or a different level of perception. Like they can just see more or, you know, to the other side of the veil, you know, or they take substances which allow their perception to open. And so it's interesting to me when you say that about opening the senses and kind of our sensory perception, which of course is funny with the romance thing as well, because it does, it puts you in a heightened state. So I wonder if you could talk like a little bit about that effect that the, sure, the flowers and the plants have about the sensory perception and kind of how that affects people.
Okay. Well, I have, I'd just like to read, just real short, the shaman is one who walks in two worlds. One is seen easily by everyone, and that's what everyone sees. You know, that's what everyone is put of aware of. But another is seen with the senses of the heart and the deep recesses of the mind and within the collective spiritual consciousness. So when we talk about flowers and how they imprint on our mind, on our consciousness, I'll tell you a little story. We had a friend of mine in 1981, we began doing celebrations. And we had a very large group of people that really loved to really work on their inner shaman and really developing it. We didn't call it that at all. But so what we did, researched. And one thing that I remember reading about Fintorn. Now, Fintorn is a place that they had a belief that they would be guided how to do literally everything. And right, they took the guidance very, very carefully. And when they started their garden, and when they and their gardens, by the way, the first few years, they had cabbages that were enormous. I mean, the vegetables.
Oh yeah, I've read about the Fintorn garden. Yeah, very famous. Yeah, absolutely.
Very famous, and it's worth, you know, reading their books. But one thing that we did and that we researched in the research that we found was sweet pea. The angel of sweet pea came to them when they began, and sweet pea imprints and opens up the mind to new ideas. And so we just thought that was fascinating. So the very first celebration we ever had, it was in Valley Forge Park, famous Valley Forge Park of George Washington. And we were on, you know, one corner of Valley Forge Park. And we were just saying, you know, we were just expressing thank you to all the things we were sharing with each other. And one thing we had was we had water, and we had flower essence in the water of sweet pea. And everybody drank sweet pea, and these people were very open-minded, so we weren't really trying to do anything. We told them what we were doing, and we were just having fun. But for about at least 2 years after that, every time, and we didn't have essences at every one, but when we would begin our ceremony, people would say, "Why does that smell like sweet pea?" And they would say, "Is somebody wearing sweet pea perfume?" And so that was an incredible confirmation for us that angels come with the flowers and with everything, of course. But flowers, so when you work with flowers, and again, edible flowers or study flowers, like in flower essences, you get the quality and the angel. You ask to walk with the angel.
Right.
The flower, the sweet pea flower. And, of course, we asked the angel of the sweet pea flower to be with us because we were doing ceremonies that we wanted the consciousness to really start raising for, you know, things like Earth Day or, you know,
right.
The Earth is here. Let's look at the Earth and let's be aware that the Earth is there. Let's take care of the Earth. That's what we were working towards. And
right.
Even having the ceremonies, you know, we won't even get into all the personal growth, of course, that we had from that. But that is the quality of the flower essences. So,
right. Well, it sounds you guys had an experience with a flower fairy, and you use the word angel, which is in the Celtic, you know, in the Celtic faith, they call the fairies angels that fell from heaven, so it's really close. But the
yes.
fairies, I mean, enjoy a long history, and they're always affiliated with the plants, right? Like, I know growing up, my mom had given me that flower fairy book. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but
yes.
it's so cute.
Yes,
yeah,
the ones that have the really
spirit.
Pretty little fairies. Don't
yeah,
you love
exactly.
that? I have a ton of
yeah.
them. Yes.
Yeah, and we had a fellow on the show a couple years ago, and his name was Stephen Byers, and he wrote this book called Singing to Plants, and he talks about how the shaman,
yes,
in order mm-hmm. to, you know, get the information for the medicine, they talk to the angels of the plant or the fairy of the plant, and they have
yes.
a conversation with it. That's what they do.
Yes, and that is the shamanic part, the shamanic aspect of shamanic gardening. And it's
right.
so pleasurable. It's just so enjoyable. And it opens up just a whole new world. And it's so wonderful. I have not studied every single plant. There's some plants down here in Florida that I haven't
mm-hmm.
studied yet. But we had this incredible class. And we would meet for 15 years, we met every Wednesday night, and we would study something, some plant, or animal,
yes.
or tree, or crystal of the earth, and it was so much fun. And then we would research it again, you know, we'd research what the books say, aromatherapy, and flower essences, and ancient ways of looking at things, and it was so, so amazing. And that's where we really began understanding what Grandmother Twyla Neach taught me, is that every plant has a gift. And every person has a gift to give. The true essence of everyone there's a gift that you give to the world.
It's really true, and it's funny because people, like, I don't know if you talk about this in the book, but there'll be, like, I have some plants that I just have an affinity for, you know, and everyone, I know, like, with gardening, people sometimes will choose plants that are, you know, stereotypically enjoyable or they just look pretty, but what do you think about, like, certain plants that people will just be drawn to, like, inherently, like, you know, if you just feel like you have, why would some people just like some plants more than others?
Well, that's a really wonderful question. I have a couple perspectives on that. One is that, you know, there's something about their energies and their consciousness or their feelings and beliefs that the plant talks to. So that would be one thing. And the other thing is, though, that when you're working on personal development, personal growth, when you're working on those parts of yourself, when you need something to open you up, you will be drawn to that. It's just like sweet pea. I remember reading in the Findhorn books that sweet pea was the first angel that came to them. And why was that? Because they were beginning, and they themselves had to be more open to completely new concepts of, you know, just taking orders for one, like taking direction for so many aspects and so many times during the day, taking guidance from within. But when we needed sweet, when then that this was, you know, later when we decided to do the ceremonies on every equinox and every solstice. And we did that for 18 years. Now, this is what I found. Through those 18 years, sweet pea was the first. Because, again, we were beginning. We needed to open our minds and our consciousness up into something completely, completely new. Because it was uncharted. There's not how many books are there written on ceremonies and how to do them. I mean, there's just not that many. So but through the years, every equinox and every solstice, we would meditate about a week or two before the actual date, and we would ask, what is the energy, or what should we just give us guidance, what you want us to do. And so we were given energies, sometimes of lapis, sometimes of quartz crystal, sometimes of pink, sometimes of red clover. Red clover was my very favorite. I walked with red clover for at least a couple years, because red clover is the quality of nurturing from Mother Earth. And when we were studying red clover, you could watch a dirt mover. We were in Valley Forge. We were watching these very large dirt movers move across the land in front of us. And there was a lot of red clover. But what happened to the red clover when it was completely smashed down by this equipment? And then it bounced off immediately. And I thought, wow. Is that strength or what? That's pretty strong. And I love that. And then I learned that red clover is a purifier. It helps to strengthen the heart. And it gives you that power, that inner strength of always moving forward, no matter what happens.
Right, even when you get plowed over.
That's exactly right. And so for me in those days, that was, you know, we started this back in 1981. There were days I had to, you know, I had my red clover tea. And that's the other thing. The shamanistic quality of gardening is this. Okay, with the red clover, I could eat the red clover buds, right? Those purplish buds. Mm-hmm. I could eat them. I could eat the leaves. I could make a tea. And later, I learned how to make essences, flower essences. So then you could create the flower essence of red clover.
Right.
And then one day, years later, after studying and making hundreds, literally hundreds of essences from all different walks of the earth, where I lived outside of Philadelphia, one day I realized that with my mind, I can attune to the red clover and be healed by it too. And that's the different qualities, isn't it? That is an example of how we can look and perceive the shamanistic qualities of gardening. You can do that on all levels. But when you
it's like the same as when you love someone and know them completely and you think about them and they'll like call you. You know, I feel like it's just like what you're saying is the same relationship you can have with plants once you're on the frequency. But that involves, you know, having to get into a relationship with the thing. But then once you have the relationship with the plant, it's like you can conjure that plant energy without even having to ingest it or eat it, you know?
Yes, Yes, that's absolutely right. And that is shamanistic, isn't it? That's developing your inner shaman to be able to do that. And we might have needed Sweet Pea to even accept that idea.
Well, because it's sympathy, right? Like a lot of the shaman can heal through sympathy, because they, you know, it's not, that's how voodoo works. It's all sympathetic magic where you become like the thing, and when you're like the thing, you're on the same thing. So that, it's very true. You have to learn how to kind of be and have that energy in order to go to that shaman level with it.
Yes, and you know, a shaman is a medicine person. I love how Grandmother Twyla said, when she was teaching the medicine wheel, she said that medicine, the word medicine, in Native perspective, is spiritual.
Right.
And so we're, the shaman is studying the spiritual essence of nature, of people. And
that's so
what we can do with the garden.
Right. Well, Melinda, we're going to take a short break here. We'll just have a few little words from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Welcome back to Expanding Minds on the Progressive Radio Network. This is your host, Maja Daou, and we're here speaking with Melinda Joy Miller about shamanic gardening. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about kind of like how to get the shaman into your garden, into yourself. And I did want to talk just a little bit, because right now there's kind of an assault on farmers and gardeners. You know, there's getting increasing laws on food and seeds, and there's been all these, you know, Monsanto has just had all these lawsuits against all these small farmers, and the farmers are trying to sue them. And I really, one of the things that's fascinating to me about your book is how you talk about, you know, you don't just have to be like out in the country, you know, on a huge expanse of land to have a garden, but you also mentioned, you know, how people can take any space really and kind of do that. And it's such a thing to me personally, politically right now, with the kind of, you know, usurpation of the seed industry. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about just how, you know, people can make gardens even without having to, you know, have these big plots of land.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I live in a gated community down here in Florida, and I no longer have, you know, 15 acres around me. I only have a little bit of land around me, and I'm not allowed to even have a compost pile.
Wow.
And because people here are afraid of compost piles. And so I have to learn how to do things in a way that is not fearful for my neighbors. And the shamanic aspect, really, just a short aspect of that, is really always making peace with your neighbors and making, not just making peace, but making things comfortable. I know a lot of people are, you know, creating gardens here in Florida that they're using the front yard for the garden. However, we can't use the front yard for the garden, mostly because of cars, but people don't like, they're not used to having that. They only want grass. You know, at some point in the future, people are going to say, what? They wanted grass instead of water gardens? They're not going to believe that that's what happened. So, now, what was your question? I'm going to ask you.
Just kind of the idea of making a shamanic garden versus so much of the control that we're seeing. You know, like you said, even on that, you know, the grass in the front of your apartment building, or all the way up to the seed industry that's controlling everything.
Yes. Well, actually, you know, it's very possible. You know, in a lot of places now, they are bringing there's many, many things that are happening. One is that they're allowing people to use their backyards as they wish. Dig up the grass and put gardens in. Put your vegetables, put fruit trees. You know, really have your little backyard garden. And that's what the book was written toward. People that live in a gated community or a little, you know, places where the houses are fairly close. And you have to make things aesthetically beautiful, really. And even comes to your compost. Where are you going to put it? Where you can hide it? Where, you know, where it's not so noticeable. And there's many ways, of course, to do all of that. And then we also have people that are starting community gardens. And why are they? Because people know that we cannot go anywhere unless it's organic, but we can't go to the grocery store and buy all our produce from there because we do not know where it comes from.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of the produce, we're so spoiled. We have produce of strawberries all year round. Well, sometimes the strawberries come from someplace that use chemicals. And as a matter of fact, probably in California, they still use a lot of chemicals. But the other thing is these community gardens are really starting to have a tremendous impact. You know, Michelle Obama having her garden at the White House and saying no chemicals was a tremendous difference. And then we have a garden in the city of Orlando that people are working toward having edible landscapes. Well, why should we have a privet tree or, you know, these beautiful crotons? Why should we have that? Why not have, you know, banana trees? You know, why not have moringa trees? Why not
That idea that they could be there for anyone to take at any time we want in the community where it's not controlled or monitored or, you know, stuff like that, yeah.
And they actually did some research. I'm pretty sure in looking at, you know, there's so many things going on the web. I'm pretty sure this was in up in Boston somewhere. It could have been New York City. I'm not sure of the city, but what they did was this. They had a community garden along the road, which isn't still the best. I mean, you still have lead and you have certain things coming from cars, so that's not the best. However, when you have people that are really down in their luck, as we do across America, why can't we just grow more food? And what they found, and this was so beautiful, it became a community garden by itself. People would certainly help themselves. They would bring other plants. They would weed. People tended and cared for these gardens along the road. They had them along the highways.
Wow.
They had them, you know, like Mrs. Johnson, she started, let's beautify the roadways with flowers. Well, now let's do flowers that are, let's do food.
That are functional. Yeah.
Yes, let's have more apple trees along the road or peach trees or pear trees or, you know, why not have them accessible on the ends of parks or edges of parks or edges so that people are more used to that and you know, instead of having, you know, and then have pollinators. You know, we talk about the bees. Oh, my gosh. The honeybees are not really indigenous to America. They were brought in. But you know who are? There's thousands of different, that might be wrong, but there's a lot of different bees in Florida, and there are some plants that will pull literally two or three dozen different kinds of bees, pollinators.
Wow.
And that's what they're doing now on these big orchards. They're putting pollinators everywhere. Isn't that wonderful?
It affects so many different levels, like not just, you know, the
human communities, but then it extends into the environment as well, you know. And I know you've studied quite a bit of cultural anthropology and stuff like that. And I wonder, you know, what do you feel like, is there something in humans that just makes us want to, like, form these community gardens and get involved on levels like that? What kind of stuff have you found out about that?
I think we are. That's a wonderful question. And certainly, let's research and get people writing more books on that. That's a really beautiful, and, you know, that goes along with people wanting to have a social network. I mean, we have it, now we have it on the internet. And so what would happen is for people, we really are social people. We're social. And so we like to do something with somebody, and we like to have something that we can share with somebody, and we love to give. Giving makes us feel so wonderful. So all of these incredible ways then of helping each other and having a garden, you know, I just love it that getting back to Michelle Obama, I mean, they give hundreds and hundreds of pounds to the food bank. And that's what we do, you know, and in Florida they were talking about, there's so many community gardens now. And the food banks, now they're beginning to get real produce. The people that are down in, that need food can literally go and pick up oranges for free.
Wow.
It's so amazing. And I think that is true, that we like and we feel good, don't we? It opens your heart when you gift somebody something, or when you help in some way, when you cooperate with each other. And certainly shamanic gardening is all about how we can be impact our neighbors in our back, from our backyards, how we can impact them in a positive way.
Well, and I think anybody that has, you know, had a neighbor that has a garden, I mean, it's like just ridiculous joy to walk by and even look at someone else's garden, even if you don't have a garden of your own, you know?
It is. It's so wonderful. You know, there was when Mayor Koch was mayor of New York City, there was a person. He was really a squatter in the Bowery. And this was, I guess, maybe late 80s. I'm not sure. But what happened was he didn't really think of this. He didn't really think of what he was doing. He just did it. He was homeless, and he took, he just lived in one of the empty buildings. You know, he didn't have anything really. No furniture, you know, he didn't have any belongings, really. And so what he did, he started to dig the ground that was in the Bowery. And he started to have community gardens for people who were, you know, who were homeless. And they had their gardens. They had some food. And he dug down and he got, you know, New York City is so rocky, or New York City, but New York has a lot of rocks. He would take rocks of all sizes. Big ones would become walls and paths. Little ones would become gravel, and he used it. He made, over the years, he made this incredibly beautiful garden out of literally nothing. He would take peach pits and avocado pits and throw them in the ground and grow apples and peaches and pears. He had this whole garden. He finally became famous. When he became famous, that was the end. He became famous enough that people from all over the world were actually coming to see the garden. And Japanese gardeners were coming for droves to see it. They were just amazed. And here all these homeless people were living. Okay, then somebody wanted the land, of course, to put up high-rise apartment buildings. And then we actually went to help raise the awareness, and like everybody around the world, there were garden designers and engineers who said, okay, put up this, but make it in this way. You can incorporate this beautiful garden in the buildings. And in the end, they completely bulldozed it over.
Oh, that's so terrible.
But we wouldn't have, maybe we wouldn't have that today.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Some people, you know, they, especially with situations like that where it's homeless people, and just so you could have a little bit of land and you can just grow food, but then it does, it's like, well, the land, everyone has to own their land and it belongs to someone else and they have to sell it. And it's so weird that you can't just like have a little piece of dirt where you can grow some stuff, you know?
It's true, but I feel that the consciousness of, you know, at least Americans, I'm going to, I don't know everybody out all the different worlds, but at least America, I think the consciousness has risen to be so much more aware of homeless. And I mean, here we have, I mean, the Kiwanis Club, I go up every Thursday. I didn't do it today because, you know, I was having this, but on every Thursday for an hour, we go pack backpacks of children who are homeless. We have 3,000 children that are homeless in this county, in Lake County,
wow,
Florida. And so they have to, on the weekend, they have to have food.
Right.
And so we do that. But that's why people are so much more aware. And down in Orlando, these younger permaculture experts and mm-hmm. organic farmers, they are making a difference in bringing incredible food to feed people in Orlando. And they're trying to get moringa trees growing, you know, all these things. Why not, you know, make the landscape completely different?
Right, and usable, yeah.
And usable. So I think it is. I think the consciousness of Americans is raising, is rising. I do. And I'm very hopeful.
So.
I'm happy about that. Absolutely.
I know.
I don't think that would have happened. I don't think the political establishment, I don't think they would have been able to get away with it. And then now look at New York. Every corner there's a green grocery. Every corner there's a green market. I mean, it's wonderful going to New York City, isn't it? I mean, there's so much that they have to offer now. Just incredible.
It's a true testament to the power of a single garden. And I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about the stars and go a little meta with it. I know you've studied a little shamanic astrology as well, and you know, a lot of folks, especially you were talking about how you're a feng shui master as well, and a lot of people think feng shui is just kind of when, you know, you put your couch against a certain wall or something, but they don't understand how intense it was in ancient China. Mm-hmm. Like it had to do with lining up with the stars, literally like planetary positions. And I mean, if you've seen one of those old feng shui compasses, I mean, the amount of information on them is just incredible.
Is
and I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I came across the Culpeper herbal, which of course was a medieval herbal book, and he has in there all of the planetary affiliations of different plants too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how the shamanic astrology has to do with the plants as well.
Well, now the shamanic astrology that I work with is different. But and before I explain what that is, I am not a I'm not so much an expert of how the planets affect plants, although I think that would be absolutely fascinating. And but I do know that in organic biodynamic gardening is a completely another certainly a level quite far above organic gardening, because they plant by the stars and the moon. And maybe if we, and not so much the planets and the stars, because I'm not really an expert there, but one thing is the moon.
Yes,
the moon has such a quality, such an impact on the earth. And so if you take, if you if you take the magnetic, just the magnetic, just think of having your followers, think of the magnetic attraction and what happens when the moon is a full moon is that they know that affects emotions, it affects mental thoughts, and it affects the tides. And
wow.
We are water, so absolutely it is going to affect us. And certainly it's going to affect the ability of the plants to pull the water into itself and what is in that water.
Right.
What is in the soil, what's in the water in the soil. Now, this is the big thing with Monsanto is, and I don't want to spend a lot of time because I try to really just focus on positive things about the earth, but just
yeah.
so people understand that Monsanto has created a plant that pulls up the same, you know, every plant would pull up some chemicals, but some plants, of course, would die from the chemicals. They have created
right.
plants that do not die from those chemicals. So when the chemicals and pesticides come into the plant, then we eat it. And
what a brilliant
what
idea.
That is
so
what the
dumb.
Problem is. And so
right, right.
now we can leave that as it is, and we can go to the organic farmer who has it to the best of their ability. They don't use any chemicals at all. They don't even use, I don't even use fertilizer. I grow my own fertilizer. And in the
right.
book, I have a few things how to do that. But, and it's, you know, all of it's very, all of this is simple, really. It's simple. It's easy to understand. So if you don't use, in your garden, you don't use, and that's why backyard gardeners are so important, because they now are growing their own fertilizer. They're growing things with good water as best as they can, or they might be using rainwater and catching water off your roof. And then they might be collecting water from the, you know, runoff water. They collect it and keep it in the garden. And so all of that, creating all that and then growing older plants like the heirloom plants that have
right.
more vitality.
Yeah.
It's not to say that everything can't be a mutation and change. I mean, that does happen. We know that. But when you alter a plant and make it do something that could be dangerous to a person, that's what we're talking about. And so
right.
a fertilizer, you know, fertilizers are made with oil. That's an oil product. And sometimes you find actual, instead of vermiculite, you might find styrofoam cups broken up in it, something like that.
That's
I don't know
true.
Whether they take styrofoam
cups. I feel like that really is kind of,
yeah.
you know, a really
so
important
have to
point to have,
mm-hmm.
to have the shamanic gardens, to leave all that kind of stuff out, and that's really kind of the best we
absolutely.
Can do. In
yes,
this form.
Absolutely.
Linda, we only have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to
oh
just...
Oh, my gosh. Oh my
I know,
goodness.
Isn't that crazy? If you
oh
can let
word.
People know, do you have a website where people can find out
yes,
more about
we
your stuff?
Do. Of course we do. Thank you so much for even mentioning that. Yes,
oh, yeah.
we have... Our website is Shambhala Institute. And that is spelled Shambhala. Two L's. Shambhala.
Fantastic. And the book, again, is Shamanic Gardening. Thank you
yes.
so much, Melinda, for being
oh,
on the show today.
You're so welcome. Oh, I'm so happy that you had me. Thank you so much, Maja.
Oh, my pleasure. That was great. For
Hello.
Me here at Expanding Mind, keep your minds open.